sing again. All this weeping and wailing and rocking of cradle, rocking a baby, that's none of mine own. I'm a young man cut down in my bosom, married my own woman to comfort my home. Oh, but now she just leaves me, and she cruelly deceives me, leaves me with a baby that's none of mine own. While I'm at work, well, she's out on the rantan, out on the rantan with the other young boys. She's out drinking and cursing while I'm at home nursing, nursing a baby that's none of mine own. So all you young boys who are fixing to marry, girls alone, for by the Lord Harry, if the one you should marry should leave you with a baby, that's none of your own.
Welcome, listener, to episode 39 of the Antigen Internet Radio Show. My name is Jason, and I'll be your host for the next hour and a half on Ship Full of Bombs, Thames Delta Independent Radio, Southend-on-Sea City's premier internet-only radio station. Tonight's show is the second instalment of a two-parter, containing all the material that was deemed too sensitive to talk about on last month's show, which was due to air on the night it was revealed to the public that King Charles III had been diagnosed with a cancer. As a mark of respect, I've waited 4 weeks for that news to sink in, and I'm sure listeners are now ready for a show that may contain mildly critical views of the monarchy. I don't anticipate any complaints. I think everyone who accepts the idea that 13th century feudalism is a working model for 21st century Britain is almost certainly listening to Radio Suffolk. We open tonight's show with Dead Rat Orchestra performing O Rue the Day. That was a previously unreleased recording, taken from the same sessions as the Pear Mains and Pippins track we released on a split 7-inch with Sutari in 2018. O Rue the Day appears on Cease Silence, a new digital compilation curated and released by Dead Rat Orchestra, with all proceeds to Médecins Sans Frontières and the Palestinian Red Crescent. The compilation features over 4 hours of music from 48 artists united in their concern over the Israeli government's military action in Gaza and the humanitarian crisis that has resulted from it. We'll have some more tracks from the compilation later in the show, but if you can't wait, you can find the album by typing Cease Silence into the search field on Bandcamp. At the end of the last episode, I left listeners feeling sad and depressed that they had to listen to me talking at excruciating length about the pressures on Suffolk County Council's budget. We left matters on a bit of a cliffhanger, with many of you anxious to find out whether the council would vote to approve the budget proposals, or whether councillors would be swayed by further interventions by popular figures from the world of entertainment. Unfortunately, no actors, comedians, trapeze artists or jugglers felt sufficiently confident in their knowledge of municipal finances to offer a counter-argument to the proposed cuts to housing-related support for the most vulnerable people in Suffolk, and councillors voted to approve the budget on the 16th of February. But I don't want you to think it's all doom and gloom for cash-strapped local authorities like Suffolk County Council. There was some good news, and it came from Deputy Prime Minister Oliver Dowden. We may not be getting the central government funding we need to deliver vital services to the community, but we are getting a portrait of King Charles III. The Cabinet Office has set aside £8 million of your money so that local councils, courts, police forces and schools can have a large photo of the petty king to inspire public sector workers, like me, by his example. Ideal for hanging in a porter cabin or covering an embarrassing hole in the racked concrete wall of a crumbling classroom. Oliver Dowden said, "Displaying this new portrait will serve as a reminder to us all of the example set by our ultimate public servant, and I hope as many eligible organisations as possible will wish to continue this proud British tradition and honour our King's reign." Graham Smith, Chief Executive of Republic, had the nerve to describe the initiative as a shameful waste of money. A comment which, in view of the King's recent news, I find extremely insensitive. Personally, I am inspired by this expensive photograph of our ultimate public servant posing in his castle with his sword and his badges. This is a man who rose to become Admiral of the Fleet after serving only 5 years in the Navy, who may not have had a paid job since 1976, but has still achieved so much more than most ex-service personnel, around 5% of whom find themselves homeless, according to the British Legion. But you won't find King Charles sleeping under a pile of wet newspapers or eating out of a bin, upsetting Suella Braverman by making the place look untidy. No, Charles has set an example to homeless veterans across the UK by developing an impressive portfolio of properties, many of which, it turns out, have been refurbished with money he has stolen from corpses. Of course, I'm exaggerating the comic effect. He had servants do that for him. Italian Books with your least favourite leech, the My Favourite Parasite remix by DS Happy Boy. That was from the Such Troubles Will Soon End remixed album, which is available from Bandcamp. I caught Italian books again recently at the Smokehouse in Ipswich at Anoma Gogo 1, an evening of experimental sounds and images organised by the guys from Tonesucker and Anoma Research. Before that, I teased listeners with a provocative statement about King Charles III stealing money from corpses. That's because, in November of last year, The Guardian revealed that the Duchy of Lancaster, the land and property estate which passed from the old Queen to King Charles without inheritance tax, had collected more than £60 million over the last 19 years from people who died intestate and whose last known address lay within the boundaries of the ancient County Palatine of Lancashire, which includes Manchester, Liverpool, Preston, Burnley and Lancaster. This ghoulish practice, like much about our so-called constitutional monarchy, dates back to feudal times, back when a king of England could lay claim to any unmarked mute swan on open water, and demand any royal fish cast up on the shores of England, including dolphins, whales and porpoises, all of which, for the purpose of His Majesty's royal prerogative, are fish. Remember those times? Yes, it's now, 2024, and the king, 75 years old, still thinks dolphins, porpoises and whales are fish. And he was the first member of the British royal family to go to university. Imagine what the rest of them think. They probably think porpoises are some kind of vegetable. Anyway, the Crown has long claimed that most of the money it takes from dead peasants, called bona vacantia, is donated to charities, but the Guardian obtained an internal policy document showing the funds were being used secretly to renovate and refurbish the King's personal property portfolio to increase his rental profits. The Duchy of Lancaster nets the reigning monarch £26 million a year in private income without the inconvenience of corporation tax. A handy little earner, as the old Queen discovered, when she had to dip into it to help Prince Andrew pay off Virginia Giuffre in 2022. I'm sure the dead peasants of Lancashire will rest easy knowing their life savings have gone to a good cause, rescuing Prince Andrew from the embarrassment of defending a civil case for sexual assault in the middle of his mum's platinum jubilee. Let's have a break for some music. This is Rev Simpkins and Jim Simpkins with Headwater. Thank you. another track from the Sea Silence compilation released last week by Dead Rat Orchestra to raise funds for Médecins Sans Frontières and the Palestinian Red Crescent. That was 10-year-old Jim Simpkins and his dad, the Reverend Matthew Simpkins, with Headwater. As if things weren't already bad enough for Charles, with the cancer and all that flack for doing up his gaffes with cash from dead commoners, he's also had to contend with the fallout from the release of the Epstein Papers, in which his brother Andrew's name is mentioned over 100 times. The newly released court files are from a 2015 defamation case brought by Virginia Giffre against Ghislaine Maxwell. They include depositions from Jane Doe 3, believed to be Giffre, alleging she was forced to have sexual relations with Prince Andrew in Maxwell's London apartment, in New York, and at Epstein's private resort in the ironically named Virgin Islands, in what she describes as an orgy with underage girls. The files also contain statements from Juan Alessi, manager of Epstein's Florida residence, who recalls Andrew spent weeks at the Palm Beach mansion, where he received daily massages. But one of the strangest revelations in the unsealed depositions was from Joanna Schoberg, a 21-year-old student who states that she and Giffre were encouraged to pose with Prince Andrew and a Prince Andrew spitting image puppet at Epstein's house in Manhattan. The depositions did not reveal whether this puppet was anatomically correct or whether, like Prince Andrew, you can make it come to life by inserting your hand into it from below. The royal, dubbed Randy Andy, the Playboy Prince by the British press in the 1980s, strenuously denies any wrongdoing and said in an interview with the BBC in 2019 that he has no memory of ever meeting Virginia Giffre. He then paid the woman he could not remember ever meeting, even with the aid of a photograph showing him with his hand around her waist. He paid this person an undisclosed sum of money, rumoured to be between £9 million and £12 million in 2022, in an out-of-court settlement that contained no admission of liability, £2 million quid of which he had to borrow from his poor old mum. Prince Andrew was of course papped with Epstein in New York just 4 months after he finished his sentence for procuring a minor for prostitution. Some might call that a lapse of judgment. Others might argue that the disgraced financier had paid his debt to society, and that it's a credit to Prince Andrew's character that he doesn't abandon his friends just because the law says they've been pimping underage girls for sex. But the Epstein Papers were yet another irritant for Charles, who reportedly feels sorry for his brother and would like to rehabilitate him, possibly with a phased return to public life. Back in February 2022, the BBC's royal toady, Nicholas Witchell, asked, could there possibly be a route back to a public role? Perhaps the answer is to pledge to support the fight against the evils of sex trafficking and by supporting its victims. A role for a man who has proved he wouldn't recognise the evils of sex trafficking if it was happening right under his penis. We'll be right back. Fever Ray from Stockholm with their new single Shiver, which came out on Valentine's Day. You can find that edit, along with various extended mixes, on their Bandcamp page. The saddest thing for me about this whole sorry Prince Andrew affair is that Andrew was the old Queen's favourite son. What's that like for poor Charles and Edward? It must be like being the guitarist in Lost Prophets, and your mum tells you her favourite member of the band is still Ian Watkins in 2024. Except, of course, that Ian Watkins went to prison for his crimes. What was King Charles like as a prince if his mum liked him less than Prince Andrew? Prince Andrew, who cost the Queen 2 million quid from her retirement nest egg just to have a peaceful Platy Jubes. Prince Andrew, who brought two child sex traffickers to Balmoral. How did his poor mum feel about that? Probably relieved. At least he wasn't bonding with Jimmy Savile, like his older brother. Now, some royal commentators have said that people shouldn't be judged by the company they keep. They don't say this about Prince Harry and Princess Meg's friendship with George Clooney, but they do say it about King Charles's 20-year friendship with Sir Jimmy Savile, Knight Bachelor, and officer of the most excellent order of the British Empire. Sir Jimmy was so close to Charles, his name was seen on the long list of potential godfathers for Prince Harry by Charles's then private secretary, Edward Adeen. Savile famously boasted of giving marital advice to Charles and his first wife, Princess Di, the Queen of People's Hearts. Sir Jimmy, who never married and lived with his mum and was accused of sexually violating corpses and abusing over 450 women and children, never revealed the details of the marital advice that he gave to the royal couple. But they split up shortly afterwards. So if it was something about spicing things up in the bedroom, sadly, it didn't work.
We hear.
the incomparable Dorian Wood with arrayas, which the internet tells me is a Lebanese fried pita and meat dish. Regular listeners need no introduction to Dorian's work. If you don't listen regularly, there's always Google. That was another selection from the Sea Silence compilation album, which you can buy on Bandcamp with all money going towards humanitarian aid in Gaza. There was good news for another Andrew, who's been living under the spectre of suspicion of sexual misconduct. Andrew Rosendale, Conservative MP for Romford, is finally able to return to Parliament for the first time since April 2022, now that the Metropolitan Police has dropped its investigation into sexual offences, alleged to have taken place between 2002 and 2009. A spokesperson for the Met said, "A thorough investigation has been carried out by detectives. They concluded that the evidence did not meet the threshold set by Crown prosecutors." Rosendale joins an ever-increasing list of serving MPs who have not been found guilty of sexual assault, including fellow Brexit Spartan Andrew Bridgen and Conservative MP for Ribble Valley, Nigel Evans. Evans was acquitted of rape and sexual assault on the 10th of April 2014. But sadly, his acquittal came at huge personal cost, having lost his entire life savings defending himself. In 2018, he told The Guardian, "It's wrong, completely wrong, to remove people's right to have expert legal representation. We're definitely talking about justice being denied as a result of LASPO. That's the Legal Aid Sentencing and Punishment of Offenders Act 2012, which cut the availability of legal aid, leading to a 59% drop in the number of advice agencies and law centres doing legal aid work. A cut Nigel Evans voted for in 2012, when he thought it would only affect other people." So sadly, this means there'll be no by-election in Rosendale's Romford constituency. But we've had three others since the last show. Labour won Kingswood and Wellingborough, and shameless political opportunist George Galloway led his Workers' Party of Britain to another single-term victory over Labour in Rochdale, after the Parliamentary Labour Party withdrew support from its own candidate, former town councillor Azar Ali, because he had claimed Israel allowed Hamas to launch its attack on the 7th of October to, quotes, "get a green light to do whatever they bloody want." That was Sutari with Savawanye, which means sing out, according to the translation on their Bandcamp page. They donated that track to the Sea Silence compilation, and it's also available on their new album, Koishlanki Pushvieta, which, when pronounced correctly, means lullabies for the world in Polish. I say that for the benefit of listeners in the UK and in Poland, all of whom were no doubt equally confused by what just came out of my mouth. Underappreciated at home, conservative backbencher Liz Truss flew to America in February to promote deep state conspiracy theories at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference. Despite a recent poll of 2017 UK adults carried out by Savanta that showed she remains the least popular politician in the UK, Truss is drumming up support for what she calls popular conservatism, or PopCon. The highlights of her tour included gurning vacantly while Steve Bannon described far-right activist and convicted criminal Tommy Yaxley Robinson as a hero, and sitting next to Nigel Farage with two tiny flags in front of them on their table to keep them happy, which is a bit like seeing two great actors reduced to panto. If you replace those words with two grifting opportunists reduced to panhandling for donations from US think tanks. Truss delivered a speech in which she blamed the downfall of her premiership not on unfunded tax cuts, but on deep state trans activists in the civil service, the left-wing financial establishment, and wokenomics. Now, some listeners may be unfamiliar with the term wokenomics. The term is most commonly used in the context of things like rainbow capitalism or greenwashing, to describe a public relations tool where social justice issues are exploited to give the illusion of meaningful change, when really it's just a PR smokescreen to disguise business as usual. A handful of batshit right-wing podcasters have tried to redefine wokenomics as a system whereby people attempt to acquire social capital by victimhood. But it's more likely that Truss was using the more widely understood definition of woke, as a term used to describe anything a person doesn't like, but doesn't have the mental faculties to explain why they find it so objectionable. It's probably a futile exercise to analyse the sounds coming out of Liz Truss's mouth, as she appears to write speeches by choosing words that begin with the same letter. She told an audience at CPAC, "You can't triangulate with terrorists." Did she mean work with them to determine the position of a point by measuring angles to it from two known points on a fixed baseline? Or did she mean form them into triangles? Or maybe she meant the term used in psychology to describe a technique commonly used by people with narcissistic personality disorder to comfort and protect their own egos by manipulating other people into conflict with each other. Triangulation involves the narcissist intentionally introducing a third party, such as an ex-partner, a friend or a family member, into the relationship. The third party serves as a tool for the narcissist to create a sense of competition, jealousy and insecurity within the victim. Much like a conservative politician will introduce a fear of Islamists or climate change protesters to create a sense of insecurity in the electorate. But sometimes there's no other option but to turn to the Urban Dictionary. It helpfully describes triangulation as engaging in non-penetrative sex, which actually makes no more or less sense in the context of Liz Truss's speech to CPAC.
Hey, this is the lost earth. People's heads are down, but they're pointing up like it's God's turf. A synagogue, a mosque, a black rock, or a pop church. Playing Christian rock in a concert, where the left wing like Madonna's skirts, or the right wing like the John Birch. A holy man quotes proverbs while they toss dirt on a toddler in a casket that he's wrapped in like a bratwurst. Real monsters, where the shots burst from militiamen in their assault merch, where the helicopters sound like ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. Reconnaissance work, where the citizens stop as they're frisking their pockets, a kid who's just out on a job search, where doctors got post-traumatic stress disorder cause all the gory stuff that he saw hurts, where the people are stuck in the demons and mucking the sagging their pieces and trees in the stuff and babies are dying like clockwork. I'm having lucid dreams of gruesome scenes, things that human beings do when we become too extreme. Pursue our prey like wolverines, we root for teams, but some see troops as a means to an end. They salute the Marines while funding the Mujahideen. Funding coups for a new regime. Puppets, we move on strings. But then there's blowback, collateral damage you see on your newsfeed, and we choose to read only one side of the narrative. Screaming through computer screens, Zoom meetings where the truth is reduced to a meme. Lunacy, we can't find unity. Instead, I'm losing sleep. Watching refugee encampment tents turn to bloodbaths of punctured abdomens, gashed skin and fractured limbs, or weapon manufacturers are cashing in. Flags of neo-fascist men flap in the wind. Back in Washington, fat old conservative chicken hawks act masker than in the act offended like I'm a bigot for even questioning or asking them if hate is a communicable pathogen passed to them. Javelin missiles and Apaches blasting. This is a psychology of a master cleanse.
How many becomes too much? How many justified then becomes enough? I see the hole become a hollow, but the terrain's so rough. Losing ourselves an ego when we should have given up. Your kingdom failed you, your king failed you. To losing your grip, the fear of unknown, the fear of being seen. I guess it's easy to deflect and revise the history. Hold the white flag, give me something to believe in.
Watch all these kids get killed and not speak up, along with healthcare workers and not speak up, journalists upon journalists and not speak up, while so many mouthpieces seem to feel the need to keep shut.
For what? Is that career suicide to you? Or just the comfortable but scared side of you? Who was thumping their Bible when Bethlehem got bombed on Christmas? Did y'all send your thoughts and prayers and whispers, hoping no one would really listen or hear it and then share their own opinions? Schools and hospitals get targeted. This ain't a difference of religion, nor is it anti-Semitism. Judaism is not a Zionist agenda. America funds Israel by the billions,
by the billions.
Upon billions.
Upon billions.
It's all good since they use that money to purchase our weapons and ammunition. If you always identify as a victim, I guess any form of resistance is an assault on your existence. Just remember how the won't someone think of the children contingent went dead silent amidst all the indiscriminate killing, the apartheid, the genocide, and the open-air prisons. Slaughtered civilians, please smear us the whataboutisms. It's a 75-year negative feedback loop with an oppressed and an oppressor, a neck and a boot for a people who've been brutalized for so goddamn long.
You gotta know deep down that shit is wrong.
How many men of God are demigods in them synagogues or little mosques? Hypocritical Christians tending to the flock like chicken hawks squawk on CNN and Fox. How many kids pitch rocks against soldiers with Kalashnikovs? The planet is a tinderbox, humanity just missed the plot. I'm not bound to the Twitter mob. Nah, my mind is clear, I'm rising to a higher tier. Up above the primal fear, wake up above the riot gear. Up above the puppeteers who profiteer like financiers. Above the little kids who died eyes wide as frightened ears. I'm up above the biosphere, here crying ultraviolet tears. Looking at us fighting like tribes with spears on our tiny sphere. If you're like Wernher von Braun, what's the consequence of murder? They don't take your life away just like some non-essential workers. I'm not talking about your server, I'm not talking flipping burgers. I'm talking about the hate like when the Christians fought the Berbers. We know some scars are ancient and they lead to dark places. Like the hearts are hard and racist, snarling at the Star of David. And I know it's hard to say it, but I'll say it. Here's a question, who's in prison? Who's flexing with precision? Guided weapons, you'll be witness 9/11. They monopolize deception. Go ask Julian Assange, your sunlight to disinfect. Washing bloody clothes and chloride, standing on the Lord's side. Let's turn them into animals like we anthropomorphized. AI and warp drives, baby corpse with horse flies. Mordecai, fortify the king, protect your tribe. The New York Times, both sides report lies. We're watching martyrs memorialized as we justify war crimes.
Give me something to believe in. Give me something to believe in.
Sage Francis with Master Cleanse, featuring Old Boy Rhymes and Ritual of Mine, with production by Alexander Brown, with only one vowel. That was released digitally on Bandcamp in January, and it was gifted to me by Zaf Mann, the man behind the In Memory of John Peel show, which broadcasts out of Portland, Oregon, but is syndicated worldwide, as befits a show of its stature. Check it out. It's still my first stop for new music, when I can't be bothered to sift through Bandcamp releases at source. Zaf wrote, "This fits your show. My tastes are obviously very predictable." Israel found itself on the receiving end of criticism in January when the International Court of Justice issued a judgment requiring it to ensure its military did not commit acts of genocide on the Palestinian population of Gaza. The interim ruling also required Israel to prevent and punish public acts of incitement to commit genocide and to take immediate and effective measures to enable the provision of basic services and humanitarian assistance to the Palestinians. For acts to fall within the scope of Article 2 of the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, there must be genocidal intent. Acts committed with intent to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethnic, racial or religious group. Israel have said this is not its intent. And since the judgment was made on the 26th of January, more than 3,000 Palestinians have died of semantics. Like most people in the UK, I take a pragmatic view of genocide. The first thing I ask myself is it happening to me personally? And if it isn't, I get on with my life as normal. But it's not quite this simple for our elected representatives. They have to balance the compassion they naturally feel as human beings towards the UK arms industry with their natural indifference to the suffering of Arabs in another country. Our government's position is complicated by the fact that we've licensed £474 million worth of military exports to Israel since 2015, which is good, but the Israeli government is now using those weapons to commit war crimes, which is politically embarrassing, and, since the ICJ judgment, potentially puts the UK government in breach of international law. Understandably, Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer have been reluctant to call for a ceasefire. Rishi, because he's brandishing the moral authority of a man who won his job in a meat raffle, and Starmer, because he didn't want the Jeremy Corbyn treatment from the British press, with headlines branding him an anti-Semite every day until the next general election. That would be awkward. How would he face his wife and children? Must be weird watching your kids grow up, knowing that you spent months opposing a ceasefire in a conflict in which UNICEF reports 40% of the casualties are children. It's interesting to compare the UK government's position on Gaza to its tub-thumping rhetoric on the bad invasion of Ukraine by Russia, in which a mere 1,180 children have been killed in the last 2 years, according to the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights. I'm sure Sunak and Starmer would argue that we can't measure moral failure using dead children as a metric. And perhaps, because of that, neither Labour nor the Conservatives could bring themselves to back an SDP motion calling for an immediate ceasefire. Starmer managed to head off a rebellion by his own MPs by persuading the Speaker to allow an amendment that called for a humanitarian ceasefire, one that allowed Israel to continue killing Palestinians as long as it felt Hamas threatened violence. There was widespread Tory outrage at this abuse of parliamentary protocol, as the death toll in Gaza topped 30,000. If anyone hoped this display of moral paralysis and equivocation would chasten the Netanyahu government into respecting the interim ruling from the ICJ, they were to be disappointed. At the beginning of the conflict, when women and children were killed in schools and hospitals, the Israeli government felt the need to blame it on Hamas for hiding in tunnels instead of coming out to be slaughtered like dogs by the world's second most highly funded military power per capita. Now, they seem to realise they can act with impunity, shooting starving Palestinians as they gather to get flour from food aid trucks on the 29th of February, killing 112 people and injuring more than 750. Initially, an IDF spokesman told Channel 4 News that most of the victims were crushed and trampled by the mob. After the head of nursing at Al-Shifa Hospital told reporters the majority of casualties had bullets and shrapnel wounds to the head and upper body, the Israeli military adjusted its version of events, claiming that starving Palestinians made their soldiers feel scared. The Israeli forces were, of course, the real victims.
We are prostitutes! Everyone has their prize! We are prostitutes! Everyone has their prize! Everyone!
with We Are All Prostitutes. You can find that track included on reissues of their second album, For How Much Longer Will We Tolerate Mass Murder? A question I imagine a lot of people are asking themselves at the moment. That was played in memory of their singer, Mark Stewart, who died last year and whose lyrics were often disturbingly prescient. On that very album, released in 1980, he called for Henry Kissinger to be tried for war crimes for the secret bombing of Cambodia. Declassified Pentagon reports now show Kissinger personally approved 3,875 clandestine raids, which dropped more than 500,000 tons of bombs on the civilian population of neutral Cambodia during the Vietnam War. Back at a time when governments had to hide their war crimes against civilians. Kissinger also died last year, peacefully at the age of 100. He will be remembered by most people outside America as a war criminal who avoided justice for his leading role not only in the bombing of Cambodia, but also for providing arms to Islamabad to facilitate the genocide against the Bengali population of East Pakistan in 1971, and for illegally arming Indonesia during the annexation of East Timor in 1975, and for abandoning the Kurds to Saddam Hussein, and for destabilizing democracy in Chile, and actively supporting the military coup in 1975 that led to 17 years of dictatorship under Augusto Pinochet, friend of the UK. Kissinger is undoubtedly responsible for more state-sanctioned murder in the 20th century than any other individual apart from Adolf Hitler. Yale historian Greg Grandin estimates that Kissinger's actions from 1969 to 1976 as National Security Advisor and Secretary of State to Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford led to the deaths of between 3 million and 4 million people. But as I always say, war crimes are for losers. No one on the winning side ever ends up in the dock at The Hague. And for Kissinger, his reward was a Nobel Peace Prize in 1973, and plaudits for being a man of peace when he finally died of old age in his home in Connecticut. In response to the news of Kissinger's death, apprentice war criminal Tony Blair posted the following tribute on his Tony Blair Institute for Global Change website on the 30th of November. I was in awe of him. I consider it one of the greatest privileges of my political life to have known him. From that first moment of meeting him to the last, he inspired me. I did not make that up. Band that make 2 minutes feel like five, according to Mike Dead of Fantasy Creeps. A harsh but fair appraisal of the Legless Crabs. That was Annihilator, the title track of an EP they released on Bandcamp in September 2022. The Legless Crabs are one of several projects helmed by Matt Griffin, who also presents the excellent Clean Nice Quiet radio show on KPIS FM. Matt has very kindly played all sorts of Antigen stuff in the past, including Piss a Bed Prophet and Earth Motherfucker. If you want to hear me play a song by your band on Antigen Internet Radio, why not start your own radio show, play stuff that I've released, and I'll reciprocate by playing your music. Now I'm going to play another track from the Sea Silence compilation album. As I've mentioned before, it's a fundraising project for Médecins Sans Frontières and the Palestinian Red Crescent, two organisations providing humanitarian relief in Gaza. The project was devised and driven forward by Dan, Nathan and Robin of Dead Rat Orchestra and features 48 artists from around the world, united in their horror at what's happening to the civilian population of Gaza. The album features artwork by James Wurst, and the playlist was shaped by ethnomusicologist Dr. Noel Lobley. The next track is from South Africa, a country with a government that can still recognise genocide, perhaps because its leaders haven't forgotten what it's like to be on the receiving end of persecution. But before we hear it, we're going to be hearing from one of the artists who contributed to the album. This is Ulile Madinda.
Once again, it's all beautiful, my people. My name is X from the Black Power Station. I think for me, it's important to be part of the compilation in many ways. You know, as artists, we must always know, Guti, we have a voice. That voice that is important to be able to share for those who don't have a voice, who might have a voice, but their voices are not heard. So through music, I think we have a role as musicians to be able to shout in a way that can get us to be understood in a way that is balanced, that can also try to show our activism to the world. So the beauty of the compilation is to show that the world is connected. And then as soon as we understand that in a positive way, in the light that can grow the community of artists actually, and understanding that we have a platform that should be utilized in a sense of raising awareness. Any injustice is important for us to speak against. This today, we might be dealing with this. Tomorrow, we might be dealing with something else. The injustices of inequality in the world seems to be growing. And then the superpowers, whoever the superpowers might be, they need to recognize that we also have a voice. It might not be accompanied by lots of money, but it's accompanied by lots of sense and lots of moral and also the human ubuntu, the reality of who we are as a people. I think for me, that's all I can say. And the love of music, the love of community. And I thank the artists from Makanda, Eastern Cape, who has donated some of their music to be part of this compilation. Much respect. I don't speak on their behalf, but their music speaks for them. And then I think as we are journeying towards a connectivity, a global community, that understands our value as the creative community, I think it's the ecosystem of all of us working together in achieving. And I'm also happy that some of the artists are gonna have an international stage, in which I think the next level is to collaborate and with these beautiful musicians that felt that they needed to add their music to the compilation. Thank you, peace and love. The Black Power Station, your international arts destination. Thank you very much.
Bismillah, they say time will tell. Real revolutionaries will rebel. Truth will dwell among the masses, setting them free. Repossessing the land into the rightful owners. That's one of the struggles that is upon us. This historical fact needs to be addressed. It's long overdue. Our land is occupied by the hands of the few. What about you who hers birthright remains landless? Victim of oppressive government. Eviction from homelands, squatter camp. Downgrading your human dignity. The insanity to
believe that black people had a choice where they live now. We in township where there's no space, while farms are occupied by granddaughters and sons of slave masters. Continuation of exploitation of more blacks cause of vulnerability, no availability of land to feed themselves, and the government is doing nothing about that cause everything is contested in this democratic country. Now you tell me, how can there be peace on the streets? Job creation cannot succeed alone if the plea of land reform is not dealt with. Now is to the booze. How did it all come to this? I'm a bulla cut the ceiling on shabo coco bait. While Tina Sipaka misela these ghetto townships as if it's a home, sick of far. While the rest of Karungo will be belief on the coco bait. Lizalo Nyana Bama Bull, Tina Sikabe Sisilong is a shallow, Sifunubaz is a cool, is a soon as a politic in the taverns and goons who buys the most expensive drinks. I was Azu like a gill, being the city boy who gets employed just for service.
Featuring Radical with Land Reform from the Cease Silence fundraising album. And before that, wise words from Ulile Kolmiex Madinda. Deaf Boys founder member and the driving force behind the Black Power Station, a community art space, venue and centre for free thought and expression in Makanda in the Eastern Cape province of South Africa. Some listeners may remember his contribution to this show way back in episode 7, when we languished in Mixcloud obscurity. The Black Power Station is still going strong, check out their Facebook page if you want to see what they're up to. And with that, we've almost come to the end of another show. And there's just time to apologise to any listeners who are indifferent to the suffering of Palestinians or offended by the lack of due deference to His Royal Highness King Charles III. We can't all be Nicholas Witchell. But please be reassured that however much you love the British royal family, they won't care what you think or feel about this radio show. They're not like you. They'll never consider you an equal. They will never socialise with you, and they will never accept you as a friend. Unless, of course, you're an enterprising financier who can procure personal services that even their vast royal wealth cannot legally obtain. Yes, the king has a cancer, but luckily for him, he received treatment within a few days of his diagnosis. And not because he's a better person, more deserving of life than other people with cancer, who now face record waiting times for treatment in the UK, far from it. His former servants describe a man who is petulant and irritable, with a lifestyle as extravagant as Louis XIV, a man who grew up as a pampered prince with a servant to squeeze out his royal toothpaste, not a euphemism, and another one to iron his royal shoelaces. A man once dubbed the Prince of Wales because of the fuss he makes when the servant who runs his bath fails to align the bath plug exactly the way he likes it. Not because of his fringe beliefs about the taxonomic categorisation of cetaceans. He's a man who, when Prince Andrew upset the people of Lockerbie in 1988 with insensitive remarks about the statistical inevitability of a plane crashing on a village at some point, called in his friend Sir Jimmy Savile, OBE, and had him write a manual on how best to conceal the unpleasantness of the royal family from the media. But sadly, this was one thing Jim couldn't fix. Here in the UK and the ever-shrinking Commonwealth, Charles is our king not because he's worthy, but because of the order in which he emerged from the vagina of a young princess, who would later blossom into our beloved Queen Elizabeth II, may she rest in peace. He's a king whose peevish behaviour may make him appear rude, aloof and unsympathetic, who may have lived the life of a pampered prince, somehow avoiding paid work since 1976. He may not have earned his admiral's costume by active duty, and his many medals may be presents from his mum for being her second favourite son. He may have befriended the most prolific rapist in British history and probably inadvertently enabled him to avoid justice and commit more horrific crimes against women, children and corpses. But after 14 years of central government cuts to local authority funding, his new portrait will serve as a reminder to us all of the example set by our ultimate public servant, copyright Deputy Prime Minister Oliver Dowden. I'm sure many inferior public servants will look to his example for inspiration as they try to teach children in crumbling classrooms, to clear the backlogs in the criminal justice system, and to refer families to food banks, debt advice and homelessness support. And they will offer silent thanks to the people of Hartlepool for their vigilance. For without them, Napoleon's monkey spies may have undermined our ancient regime with their filthy republican sedition, and we'd be selling plastic guillotines in the Tower of London gift shop instead of platinum jubilee commemorative plates. It's thanks to them, those simple seaside folk and their eagerness to kill anything that looks strange or unfamiliar, that we have a constitutional monarchy and coronation tea towels, so that holidaymakers from modern democracies can take home a souvenir of their visit to this realm of twilight, where a population is trapped in an eternal cosplay reenactment of a 13th century feudal state. Let's draw proceedings to a close with a final song from the Sea Silence compilation. This is Wam Kelwa Nkone, a singer, songwriter, guitarist and filmmaker who was born in Carriager, a town in the Eastern Cape province of South Africa. This track is called Thakosa. You've been listening to the Antigen Internet Radio Show on Ship Full of Bombs, Thames Delta Independent Radio. Thank you very much for listening, and good night.
name.